Welcome to the Everything Voluntary Podcast, your internet source for voluntarism, free markets, radical unschooling, peaceful parenting, self-improvement, and anything else we really want to talk about. Or to put it simply, we're two dads trying to make the world a little bit better for our kids. And now, here's your hosts, Skylar Collins and Philip Eager. That's me, by the way.
Okay, well, let's see. What episode are we? We are episode 39. And we're in the, let's see, by the time this releases, it'll be October of 2014. So, welcome. I'm Skylar.
I'm Phil.
And we wanted to, Phil came across the unschooling entry on rationalwiki.org, and it has a criticisms section of unschooling, and it's like, looks like it's 7 bullet points. We thought it'd make for good conversation to just read through those and then kind of critique the criticisms. Anyway, go ahead.
And now this isn't because the Rational Wiki is against it, obviously. Since it's doing a Wikipedia type thing, they always include capitalisms. Did I just say capitalisms? I must have. Criticisms. Oh, what kind of Freudian slip?
Yeah, what kind of Freudian slip is that?
They always include capitalisms. Evil capitalism. No. Okay. So, but yeah, just like anything that's presented in a wiki or in an encyclopedia, they try to give a balanced perspective. So there's, you know, they quote John Taylor Gatto. They have a section of criticism of traditional schooling. So they're not attacking. I just, when I saw the criticisms, they were kind of weak. So I wanted to go through them and see if we couldn't remove at least a couple of these bullet points through conversation. So do you want to just hop right in, or do you want me to read the intro paragraph or?
Well, yeah, no, let's just kind of go in. I will say that this entry leaves much to be desired.
You can edit it.
Well, no, I know. And maybe I will. Maybe I'll edit it and throw in a whole bunch of links to my website, but Everything Voluntary. Well, I mean, it kind of has a little intro, which, okay, so just the first sentence, I'm kind of nitpicking because, and I don't know if this is just something that you see, if this is just let me read it. It says, unschooling is, this is the first paragraph on the entry. Or the first sentence. Unschooling is a movement opposed to both public schooling and homeschooling on the grounds that both consist of brainwashing.
Oh, yeah, right. That's pretty.
I was like, okay, for your first sentence, that's pretty weak and it's pretty inflammatory. Now, brainwashing.
Straw man, almost.
Yeah, brainwashing is a pretty strong term. Now, I'm not saying that I disagree that public schooling and even homeschooling can consist of brainwashing, but I think it seems like a really loaded term.
Yeah, it's like bombastic.
I don't know if the rest of Rational Wiki, I'm not familiar with it, if everything's kind of written this way or not, so I'll kind of hold judgment on that. But that was a little concerning. Plus, to call it a movement opposed to schooling on the grounds of brainwashing, that I think is one part of the movement, but I don't know. Personally, I've spent more time in looking at unschooling, you know, as better intellectually for children, not, you know,
right,
the positive side, not so much what it's against as what it's for. Now, and so if you go down where it says, where was it? It said something about how such a big. Anyways, go on, and I'm going to look for this.
Oh, I was just going to say, I think a more diplomatic term for brainwashing is conditioning. And it's that there's kind of a negative aspect of conditioning children to only learn in certain ways at certain times, and I don't find that I don't know that that's helpful to the act of learning, which just to say unschooling is the one of the fundamentals is resisting the brainwashing of public school and homeschool when there's better words for brainwashing. If it's trying to be a rational wiki and not a hyperbolic wiki, having the word brainwashing in the first sentence, it automatically kind of paints this image of a frantic, paranoid parent trying to prevent, like, the lizard people from brainwashing their children into supporting wars to offer up the blood sacrifices in the Middle East where they're all buried, the lizard people.
Okay. Yeah, I think I would rather this say indoctrination.
Yes.
I think that's less hyperbolic than brainwashing.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, it goes on. But, oh, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say I found the sentence I was looking for. Okay, it's down in the it kind of goes off that, right? So it says it's a movement opposed to schooling on the grounds that it consists of brainwashing. And then down in the criticism of unschooling sections, one of the sentences in the introduction of that sentence says, unschooling advocates almost exclusively rely on attacking the U.S. public school system rather than providing good, solid reasons for which this entirely different concept is a good one. And I
what?
Absolutely disagree with that. Every unschooling website that's worth anything, every popular one, which is like Pamela Riccia, Sandra Dodd, Dana Martin, 99% of the stuff on their websites are all the promotion of, you know, the reasons of why it's a good concept and how to do it. To say that it's almost exclusively relied on attacking this public school system, that's just not accurate at all.
Yeah, almost exclusively.
Yeah.
And to say rather than, if you said while providing good, solid reasons for which this entirely different concept is a good one.
Right. Now, the section of my book on unschooling, I do the first two chapters do criticize schooling. And that's really as a means of preparation to then say, okay, well, you know, you don't like schooling, what are you offering? And then it goes into the introducing unschooling, and then it shows kind of how it works and some unexpected benefits, and then has an interview with a grown unschooler, and you know, and then it's mostly the promoting the good aspects than it is attacking schooling. And so I think that sentence needs to be changed, and maybe I'll go in and change it. But
right. It comes across the parts of unschooling in your book, it comes across as a way to have, oh, I had the thought and then it got blasted out of my head because my son upstairs just stomped on the ground. And I was like, did the mic pick that up?
Oh, no,
like, squirrel.
Well, okay. I just wanted to also add, it seems to me like maybe the reason they're saying that is because they seem to, this particular entry relies a lot on John Taylor Gatto, which is almost exclusively a criticizer of public education.
Well, sure. The dude was a school teacher for 20 years.
Yeah. So if that's their basis of saying that unschooling is that way, then that's inaccurate. John Taylor Gatto is not, while he is he is known for criticizing public schooling, he's not well known for promoting unschooling.
Right. Yeah. He is more, focused on the criticism, but I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing, because I've noticed that in his writings and also in the book, there's you paint a picture of a better way of educating children, and it raises your standard, and then the criticism of the public schools is a way to kind of be like, do you see how you just raised your standard on education? Now let's see how public schools match up to that. Do you kind of, can you see that now that you understand what children are capable of learning on their own independently, without coercion, without embarrassment, without shaming, without testing, without comparison to peers? to go back to the public schools and start talking about what's going on there, it makes the contrast very clear. Does that kind of make sense? It's putting your hand in ice water and then moving it to warm water. Articulate I am today.
So I just caught that term brainwashing again here in the middle of the criticism of traditional schooling, the beginning of the fourth paragraph down in that section. Yeah. And I'll just read that first sentence, and it's really kind of funny. And this is something that I've never heard from any advocate or supporter of unschooling at all. Let's see it, you know, and I'll, you know, obviously my experience with it is not, he's not the greatest or anything like that, but I have spent a lot of time on, like I said, some of the most popular sites, and I've never seen this argument. But it says, unschooling supporters are also against the brainwashing that goes on in the classroom, especially in history and often economics, teaching students that capitalism is the best system possible and drilling into their heads that it is not worth fighting for something more. I thought that was like, somebody's trying to make a point here. Some leftist really? Or whatever probably edited this and stuck that in, or I can't say now, obviously, you know, how are we defining capitalism here? If we're defining it as free markets, then no, schooling never that I recall brainwashed me into believing in free markets. That would be inconsistent with the act of brainwashing, really. And obviously inconsistent with the goals of government. And I was in government schools, as are most kids in the U.S. Now, if by capitalism they mean, you know, corporatism or crony capitalism or state capitalism or whatever fascism. You want to say, right. I really didn't get that either. Now, if learning basic economics, you know, supply, demand, and all these things is akin to being brainwashed in capitalism, well, I never took an economics class. I didn't even start learning economics until, you know, I started reading that stuff after I was married. And I don't even remember that there were any elective economics classes. It seems to me like economics was not around in high school when I was there.
They didn't even have classes to teach you how to pay bills and kind of manage your own finances, nevertheless, large-scale economic theory.
Yeah, exactly. To me, that's a college course. I've always viewed that as a college course. anyways, that needs to be edited and changed, I think.
But they did teach us dodgeball.
Yeah, I don't know what that could even be changed to. It's like, you know, they're against brainwashing, especially as it concerns capitalism. It's like, I don't know. Now, I will say this. Unschooling historically has been a liberal leftist movement, as opposed to homeschooling, which is usually a conservative religious right movement, if that makes sense.
Kind of hippie-ish.
Yeah, typically your unschoolers back in like the 70s and 80s were liberals and progressives who saw the value, intellectual value of unschooling. You know, they were otherwise homeschoolers, but then they went towards this way because they saw, you know, the conservatives and the religious right and kind of their opposite in that regard, sort of being more rigid and structured at home. And they were kind of, you know, looking at that and analyzing that and saying, you know, that's not really, that's all how it seems to have come about to me. Now, I'm certainly not an expert on the history of unschooling thought or anything. So, you know, it just, from my understanding is that unschooling was originally more a leftist, progressive, liberal movement, whereas homeschooling was on the other side of the aisle.
Yeah, and there, you know, there's the big connection to the La Leche League doing the breastfeeding, which isn't terrible, but there's kind of this Earth Mother perspective out of which it arose. A lot
definitely
of, you know, like non-conformity to all societal expectations, and so attending school was just another thing to not conform to. It seems like there's some elements of, it seems to rise out of the 60s hippie movements.
Yeah, I was thinking. I'm kind of thinking hippie too.
Yeah, and I'm not saying that in a derogatory way. Like,
no,
I definitely
hippie culture.
Yeah, I definitely appreciate hippies. They've moved a lot of stuff forwards. So
yeah,
forward.
Okay, yes. All right. Let's move on to the criticisms of unschooling. Now, I'll just read the first. It says, criticism of unschooling revolves around the fact that while the traditional structured school system may not be perfect, to remove it entirely is too big a step and is actually more detrimental to the intellectual development of children than public school. You know, so just right off the bat, I think I can say this again and again and again going through this, but this criticism seems vastly ignorant of the anthropological and evolutionary psychology, a la Peter Gray, studies that have been done that show that no, actually, what's best for the intellectual development of children is free play.
Right. Yes.
Anyway, so then, okay, so. Unschooling is a replacement for traditional schooling, removes the downside of structured learning, genuine or otherwise, but it also removes countless benefits that have been shown, notably, and then here's the bullet points. So the first one, that there are valued qualifications available in the school system that are recognizable. While people should never be judged by their certificates alone, they do help judge a person's ability and commitment. Now, the only certificate that one gets out of public schooling, bless you.
Thank you. Sorry.
The only certificate that one gets out of public schooling is a high school diploma, and there are equivalency diplomas that you can test through, and unschoolers often do, especially unschoolers who are interested in pursuing college. You know, it's from what I understand, from what I've read, and from what I've been told in personal interviews with grown unschoolers, is that it's very simple to just study what you need to, pass the GED, and you're done. And that is the equivalent to a high school diploma. So it's not like public schooling has the monopoly on these certificates and that you can't get them without going to public schooling, however much value they hold. What do you think?
Right. Yeah, no, absolutely. I think, I wonder if they're also talking about, like when I read that, I got the idea of the teacher's certifications. I didn't realize that was about the graduation, like the diploma and all of that. So I guess that shows my public school education that I didn't pick up on the context clues of that. No, that yeah, it's basically if you're looking for a piece of paper, if you could get a GED, you can get into, if you want to do community or state college and then move on to higher learning, it'll only depend on your performance at the college. I don't think the high school transcript is nearly as important as the undergraduate work preparing you for higher learning, if that is your goal. So I think about it and just imagine you get to 17 or 18 when it's time to go for your GED. I mean, you could do it at 16 too. But you haven't had a lot of testing. So if you're a good tester, if you would have been a good tester in the schools, it might not have been, you might not be as prepared as you could have been. But if you are an anxious tester and you feel like everything is riding on it, not having the past traumatic experiences associated with the tests to, build up to your, you know, SAT or to your GED test. I see it almost seems like that would be an advantage to just have a pragmatic outlook on schooling rather than all of this trauma and anxiety that has been built up through the pressures of the school system. Does that kind of make sense?
Uh-huh.
That you go into it with a better attitude than someone who's been tested since the age of five.
Definitely. And that's what I've read from grown unschoolers too. You know, who either, you know, you can find people interviewing the grown unschoolers, and that's often a question they have. And that's exactly what they say, is that, you know, it was a new experience. And so they were excited, you know, because it wasn't something that was, drudgery to them,
Yeah, there you're not so wrapped up in grades and how that reflects on your definition of character. The most they may have done is like a fun internet quiz asking them different trivia and stuff, for which they get like a little dopamine reward at the end in the form of, you know, a little medal or something. But it's not the "your life will be determined by your grades in second grade." It's not that kind of pressure. So you could go into it in your critical thinking mode rather than fight or flight, which the anxiety would trigger. So anyway, yeah, that's all I have to say about that one. So boom, all right,
go ahead.
One.
Well, cool. Let's just go every other. Let's just go every other. So go ahead on the next one.
All right. The next one says that structured public school provides a system of peers and friends. An unschooled individual would have to find peers and friendship groups entirely by themselves. Admittedly, unschooling sees that as a feature, not a bug. Similarly, a traditional school provides a framework for children to experience other cultures. This is one I have personally heard, is that homeschooled and unschooled kids are uncultured. They don't know what's going on in the world. They don't understand the diversity. I think this is actually code to just get, for they don't learn how to get along with other races and ethnicities.
Right, or they're not forced to get along.
Yeah, exactly. That, 'cause that's how you get along with people, right, Skylar? That's how you make new friends. People bigger than you force you to interact with them.
Right.
And get along. That's the foundation for true friendships and understanding.
Yeah.
Okay, so maybe I won't be so attacky on this one, but I want to try to give a kind of balanced response. So the structured public school provides a system of peers and friends. Let's add on to that sentence. Peers and friends that are chosen through accidents of geography and isolated to similar age.
Right, so we could turn that around and make it a criticism of public schooling by saying that structured public school provides an unnatural system of peers and friends.
Yeah, derived from accidents of geography and arbitrary birth dates rather than common interest.
I mean, you're stuck with – well, I would say you're stuck with – you're put in a room with far more kids than you really need – to be interacting with on a daily basis when we consider evolutionary mismatch, right? When we consider evolution as a species. But then also those kids that you're forced to be with are all your same age rather than younger than you, older than you, way older than you. Anyway.
Right. The full variety of human experience.
Right. Which is what?
What they may allow you to experience in a variety of cultures, they deny you by creating a hierarchy of birth order. Do you remember being in elementary school and being like, "Oh, what grade are you in?" "Oh, you're in fourth grade." "Whoa, you're older than me."
You're better than me. Yeah,
you'd talk to a second grader and be like, "Ah, I'm better than you." And then other third graders are like, "Oh, these are my people." It just, you know, I mean, once high school rolls around, you might interact with people that are, you know, anywhere from 1 to 4 years older than you.
Well, especially if you're opportunistic like I was as a senior and you go for the sophomore chicks.
Hey, not a bad idea. Come on.
No, it's not.
Not to mention a system of peers and friends, and you can add from and in middle and high school are going through their hormonal angst. And are just the idea that it's a good idea to put horny teenagers in a group where there's almost unlimited prospects. Where those who can't even get those unlimited prospects feel like they have to define themselves by their ability to get those prospects. It almost only becomes about the system of peers and friends over the education itself.
Oh yeah, good point.
Yeah, so anyway, yeah. Okay, similarly the traditional go ahead, sorry.
No, I was just gonna say that next sentence is golden, where it says an unschooled individual would have to find peers and friendship groups entirely by themselves.
Oh, preparing them for adulthood.
Well, no. What I mean is, as if I as a parent completely hands off and uninvolved in my unschooled kid's life.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I don't proactively, like, I took Nate to the playground the other day and he started playing with these two kids and they were getting along and they all thought each other were funny. And I was like, they are really getting along. That's making me so happy. So I found their parents and I started talking to them. It's like, hey, see, the kids are getting along. That's pretty cool. And I talked to them. I got their phone number and they go to the park all the time. So now we're going to set up play dates. If you're not a scaredy cat and you have actual social skills, you could just make friends that easily. Kids aren't that picky. They like to hang out with each other. And my son is incredibly friendly. He has no anxiety about walking up to somebody and saying, hey, I'm Nathan. I'm 6 years old. Do you want to play? What's your name? How old are you? Like, he's just super curious.
Oh, I
the
know.
Boys or, respond well. Girls are kind of like, to him, because boys at school don't act like that. Because Nate actually has social skills and isn't afraid to talk to girls.
Right, exactly. Yeah, no, and it says here that it's a feature, but entirely by themselves is not the feature. The feature is that you've got involved parents who are looking for groups. I mean, I spend a lot of time interacting with other unschooled parents in unschooling groups on Facebook and then setting up events together and then attending those events and meeting them one-on-one, you know, having conversations while our kids play. My son met a friend who lives up in Ogden, and they're the same age, and they've immediately, you know, as soon as we got home from where they met, they started Skyping and playing Minecraft together. It was just like instant.
Oh, that's awesome.
You know?
That's
just,
so cool.
He told us just to look up his name on Skype, and we did, and we found him, and then he called him, and then that kid's called my son, and so now they've got this relationship building, and now... And I didn't even push him to go that time, and we were going to a farm. You know, I just asked him, and he's like, okay. And it you know, now that he's got the friend, he's now more likely to go the next time, and then to make even more friends. But as a parent, if I'm an unschooling parent, I'm more likely to be interested and involved in helping my son find peers, and that sort of stuff too. So I think it is a feature, and I think it's a good feature.
Just the fact that they use words like entirely,
yeah,
rather than you know, these poor unschooled kids, they have to learn how to make friends and aren't just thrust into social situations where they're forced to interact and have the same kind of bonding that Marines and prisoners have with each other.
Now, that's not to say that my son, he has friends that he made when he was in preschool. He's got one that he plays with from time to time still. He's got others that he's known from church. And he's got his cousins that he's really close to. But he's also made friends on his own you know, through Minecraft, playing in public servers. And then he asks, what's your Skype name? And they tell him, and then he calls him and they sit and chat, you know?
That's so cool.
So he has taken that into his own hands in that case. And I think a lot of that is tied to us not restricting his use of these technologies and not approaching it in a spirit of fear, you know, that he's going to meet some psychopath or anything like that, but just, you know, letting him control that aspect and saying, look, I mean, it's extremely unlikely that that's going to happen these days.
Yeah.
Even in the past, I think that fear has always been way overblown. And he's obviously going to talk to the person, and he can tell if he's talking to an adult or not, or if he's talking to a kid. I mean, that's not hard to gauge. So, you know, and he hasn't. So I've, you know, that's been pretty cool to see.
Yeah, dude, that's so awesome. My son has proven to me he is not afraid to make friends. I gave him one playground rule, and that is if you walk up to somebody and you're nice to them, but then they're mean back, that means their brain isn't working right. It doesn't mean they're broken. It just means at that moment their brain's not working right, and they might hurt your feelings. So it's better if they're mean to you back, just move on to the next one. Don't try to win over a jerk.
Yeah,
I think that's a pretty sane. Yeah, because then you don't waste your time trying to win the approval of people who are just exercising power over you.
And not only that, but yeah, when people are trying to power over you, you're not forced to endure it like you are in school. I mean, you can try to, you know, usually you're not going to tell your parents because you don't want to be labeled the sissy and this and that. So you're just going to put up with it. Right, I mean, if it gets violent, then parents could get involved and then the school could, you know, make a little effort or progress into, you know, keeping you guys apart or whatever. But that's all just doesn't even compare to the value and the helpfulness that is just, you know, disassociating completely. You know, if you're a bully, yeah, I don't ever have to see you again.
That's ostracism.
That's how it is as adults too. I mean, usually, I mean, if you just randomly meet a bully or somebody that's being a jerk, you can just disassociate and that's it. You know, obviously when it comes to family and stuff like that, no, there are bullies, you know, whether they're parents or whether they're siblings, that you might be forced to associate with. But again, if you're an unschooling parent, you're far more likely to not be a bully, and your children, because of the relationship that's being built through spending so much time together rather than being segregated and put to school most of the year, you're developing friendship with your siblings rather than enmity. Definitely. So that stuff is all less of a problem for the unschooled than it is for the schooled. So that, again, that's a feature.
Boom. Two down.
All right. The next one. It says that structured learning has proved so far to be the best way to intellectually develop a child. It provides them with motivation and puts them on a level filled with their peers. While unschooling may be able to tailor education to the needs of an individual, the spread of abilities and competencies across all individuals would be huge. Now, I've got major problems with this. First, where he says structured learning has proved so far to be the best way to intellectually develop a child. That might be true when it depends on what we're talking about when we're talking about intellectually develop. If we're talking about becoming good little obedient worker bees, that's probably true. When it comes to, you know, actually developing critical thinking, empathy, artistic and creative expression, and so on and so forth, it absolutely has not been proven that structured learning is the best way to develop that in a child. And again, this goes back to our evolution and anthropology. If you look at that, no, free play is the best way to intellectually develop a child. I think that's been shown through you know, evolutionary and anthropological studies. Then, you know, and not only that, but also modern studies. When you look at the studies that have happened to among unschoolers, done by, again, Peter Gray, and I'll put these links in the show notes on his surveys that he's done and another research that he's done on that. But also the research that he's done with for the Sudbury Valley schooling, which is kind of an unschooling school. It's a school, and it's kind of what's called a democratic school, where the rules of the school are democratically decided by the students themselves. But there is no curriculum. There are no teachers. It's the kids are given freedom to do absolutely whatever they want with the school's resources. And the kids out of that type of school absolutely praise it and love it and are completely fulfilled by it and developed, you know, great by it. And there's been a lot of research on those as well that Peter Gray's done. So, and he talks about a lot of that in his Free to Learn book, which starts out on the anthropological research and then finishes the second half of the book on all of his work that he did with the Sudbury Valley, as well as unschooling. So really good book. It's called Free to Learn by Peter Gray, and I'll link to it. But anyway, so that first sentence there is bonkers. And then it says, it provides them with motivation and puts them on a level filled with their peers. Now, provides them with motivation. Schooling, I think, demotivated me, right? It was always, you know, the carrot, the stick. Once the carrot or the stick are gone, there's absolutely no motivation. So you get out of school and you're not, you know, that motivation is gone. Whereas unschooling, I think, does a better job of promoting, you know, intrinsic motivations and helping them develop the intrinsic motivation that goes along with, you know, what am I interested in? I want to pursue that, right? Because they're constantly being motivated intrinsically to obtain different goals. I mean, that's what unschooling is. Yeah. It's built on intrinsic motivation. And so I think that's, you know, again, if the motivation is to be good worker bees, and all of the rewards and punishment, you know, carrots and stick that go along with that, then yeah, I guess public school prepares them for that. But that, you know, that's not what we're striving for usually as unschooling parents at all, and especially as voluntarist unschooling parents. Anyways, right. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, well, as far as the last sentence goes, while unschooling may be able to tailor education to the needs of an individual, the spread of abilities and competencies across all individuals would be huge. So this is a collectivist criticism of an individualized education, So if you unschool your child, wait, Skylar, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, okay. The sound cut out for a second.
I had to clear my throat, so I hit mute.
Oh, perfect. Good for you.
My wife listened to our last podcast, and she's like, you know, somebody cleared their nose. And I'm like, oh, it's probably me. I usually hit mute, and I must have forgot.
Oh.
Anyway.
Okay, so this is particularly true of very simple skills such as... Oh, wait, sorry, that's the next one. While unschooling may be... Yeah, the spread of abilities and competencies across all individuals would be huge. So this is saying, look, we need to educate everybody to have a society where there's no predictability of what kids will know by the time they graduate. That's kind of what this feels like. It's saying, you know, we need children to be predictable, and the spread of abilities and competencies across all individuals would be huge. Why is that bad? Why is that bad? Isn't there like a bungload of jobs that need to be done? Isn't there a million different things you could do as a human? Wouldn't a spread of abilities and competencies across all individuals be like a great thing rather than make everybody good at the same crap that is useless to society?
What I think it's saying is that structured learning creates the spread of abilities and competencies across all individuals. That's how I read it. I see what you're saying, and I agree. Because I think
that is one of the concerns, even though that may not be what that paragraph was about.
Yeah, I think that's a feature of unschooling, because it doesn't say you must learn these things. It allows, and everybody's got different interests, you know, and so they go into those things. Anyway.
Okay. Yeah, it seems to be a socialist criticism of unschooling.
Yeah.
You're not going to be on the same page as everybody else, and that's a problem.
It is, and it, you know, I mean, obviously, one of the big ideas and the big goals of government schooling is to create a standardized citizenry, and by standardized, it means, you know, a spread of certain abilities and competencies, but you know, those that they consider to be, you know, sufficient and sufficiently broad.
Right.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Okay.
I call that being spread thin, but whatever.
Yeah, good point.
So, all right. That next one, I think, am I reading this one?
Yeah.
Okay. That human knowledge, rather than being ripe for the picking out of the world itself, must be taught in the familiar person-to-person fashion, requiring the use of a school in some form. This is particularly true of very simple skills such as reading and writing, which undoubtedly unschooling supporters will take for granted, possibly having forgotten what it's like to be illiterate. What a just individually opinionated criticism. It's not even sound.
Well, right, yeah. So it's saying that human knowledge, rather than being ripe for the picking out of the world itself, which I think unschoolers would say it is.
Totally.
And that's why we want our kids to go out there and pick it out of the world itself. They're saying that it must be taught in familiar person-to-person fashion, which is definitely not what kids are getting in school. They're not getting person-to-person. They're getting person-to-30 persons.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so then they're saying that, you know, human knowledge, it requires the use of school in some form. In some form. Well, in not any form that I have seen.
Right. Oh, okay, yeah. In some form, what about a YouTube video? You know, this is... And they say this is very, this is particularly true of very simple skills such as reading and writing. Okay, so my son, we taught him like the sounds of the alphabet just because he was little and he thought it was fun. And so we had the letters and so we'd sing songs. But then he found a YouTube video that was like one of his favorite songs. And it was called A is for Apple. And it says A is for Apple, Apple. And then it kind of goes through all of them. And he wanted to watch that all the time. This is when he was like 2 years old. And that taught him the kind of phonic style of reading. And before he even turned 3 years old, he started sounding out three-letter words on the refrigerator magnets. But then from there, he began to learn how to type and search for what he was looking for. And then Google would auto-correct his spelling mistakes because he'd spell it how it sounded. But then Google would give him feedback being like, did you mean this? Like, I remember coming down when he was 3 years old and seeing a Google search for MORBOLRUN, all as one word. Mm-hmm. And I was like, Marble Run? And I was like, oh, he's trying to write Marble Run. Like, because he loves the videos of marble runs, dropping the marble in and it goes down and slides down. And so because of his interest in that and his interest in Minecraft, Google has been his instructor, and it doesn't judge, it doesn't grade. It just offers helpful suggestions whenever he types in a word that he might spell wrong. And then he's internalized that and punctuation and grammar. Now, granted, his handwriting's a little behind, but...
So what? I mean, yeah, what do you need handwriting for these days?
Yeah, exactly. Like, how many things is he handwriting? Well, he's not going to have the satisfaction of calligraphy or a handwritten letter or, you know, note-taking in school. Or, you know, like, when you really go through it, that I mean, yeah, I'd like him to be able to have slightly neater handwriting, but I have terrible handwriting, and I went to school. I know that's not a great argument, but... I write like a toddler, and nobody ever corrected me. Nobody was ever like, you suck at this. You're writing from the bottom up? What? You know, I have a very weird kind of handwriting. Thank goodness we have typing, because then everybody I interacted with through text would think I was an idiot if I had to handwrite. But now I can type, and it's nice and clear, uninhibited by my motor skills in writing words. So
yeah, definitely. And I, you know... and that's a common concern that people have when it comes to unschooling. They're like, well, how will they learn to read? How will they learn to write? How will they learn to do arithmetic? And
ask those people the last time they read a book. Just see, right, just see how many people respond. I read one this year. It's about sports. Sorry.
Right.
Go ahead.
And so, you know, what I've seen, you know, how unschoolers have responded to that is well, when I wanted to do something that required that I learn how to read, I learned how to read. I mean, just think of it this way. This is an insight that I had really early on. As an adult, okay, or even just, I mean, if I can put myself back in my 12-year-old head or my 14-year-old head, I had the maturity and the intelligence to be able to learn some pretty complex things. Things that were more complex than learning how to read. You know what I mean? Or
right,
learning how
right.
to write. And I really don't see why somebody who's 12 who hasn't yet learned to read can't easily pick it up. And that does go along real well with, you know, the actual experiences of that unschoolers have had who don't learn to read until they're 12. And as soon as they do learn to read, they're immediately in Harry Potter or Lord of the Rings or something that, you know, you would consider either on or above their grade level. They're not sitting there reading Dr. Seuss for a year. You know what I mean?
Right, right.
And that's a very common story I hear from people who learned to read very late, was that they learned to read and then they were immediately reading, you know, the heavy stuff. It wasn't like they had to go through grades one, grades two, grades three, slowly, like kids, you know, like kids in school do.
Yeah, what it takes, you know, 4 years for a public school education to teach a child can be learned in, you know, probably a couple weeks. If you understand how to learn things in general, that completely applies to reading and writing. Like, because it's, oh, each letter is a symbol for a sound. Got it. Okay, I'm reading English. There's some weird rules. I'm sure I could ask a parent about that. Or maybe I could watch a YouTube video. Or did I guarantee, like, I don't know.
I don't know. It seems to me like what they mean by writing is probably handwriting, but you could also mean like composing sentences and paragraphs and essays and that kind of stuff, you know, like writing.
Right, right.
But I think the best way to learn writing is through reading.
Yeah. Right?
It's through reading your language and reading proper structure. When you then start actually writing something, if you write it wrong, it's going to stick out and it's going to look funny to you. And you're going to say, no, that doesn't seem right. Let me rewrite this, because you're so used to proper structure through your reading. And being such a big reader as I am, that's really helped me become a better writer, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember. I see myself writing like some of the authors I've read in recent years. Like the ones I've really dug in deep with. I see their styles creeping into the way I write things and even the way I think. So yeah, I completely value the skill of reading. I don't know that rote memorization and drilling and grading and assigning your personal worth to the approval of a central authority figure in the classroom is the best way to ensure that that is learned without also tacking on a bunch of emotional baggage that ultimately leads people to not want to ever read after high school ever again.
Right, yeah, it's been a chore for them, and so they're less likely to pick up a book once they're out of school.
Yeah,
okay. Which is unfortunate, definitely.
Yeah, it's a tragedy. Okay, so on to the next one.
All right, the next one. That unschooling or lack of any organized structure outside the home does not prepare children for any type of life away from their parents. Indeed, children will not learn discipline and basic skills necessary for success and will flounder in the regimented structure of a university or college setting. I will say that this one is completely demolished by the real world experience of unschoolers. I mean, every unschooler that I've met and read about, unschooling has been very beneficial for them. And it's actually funny because it talks about floundering in the regimented structure of a university or college setting. One of the biggest criticisms by unschoolers of university and college settings is that everybody else seems to be there to party and not to learn, while they're there to, you know, they want to learn through the structure provided by the college. That's why they are there. And
well, Skyler, that's the whole point of college. You could go anywhere to learn, but you got to get into the good colleges to have the right kind of parties, to do the right inappropriate things in front of the right friends, to forge relationships of loyalty, because they have your blackmail, but you also have theirs. It's the mutual blackmailing of crazy college partying that drives the economy, Skyler. I'm really pissed at you for even questioning this virtuous system that has given us the magnificent world that we have. Okay, that was that was so sarcastic I could taste it as I was doing that.
Well, and I also
black
like how
drool started coming out.
How confidently it states that children will not learn discipline and basic skills necessary for success. It's like, that's just not true. I mean, they're constantly developing.
So what are those skills? What are the basic necessary skills? Obedience, getting good grades. Okay.
I said, so if success is defined as being a valuable worker bee, in industrialized society or something like that, then it might actually, I think unschoolers could do that just as well. But you know, they're far less likely to want to or to aspire for that. I think their aspirations are higher. Not only that, but they know how to learn what they need to do. They know how to learn, they know how to unlearn, and they know how to relearn, because that's what they're constantly doing day in and day out. And they know how to find out. They know how to research how to do things and how to go forward in whatever it is they want to pursue. It's interesting because you look at Peter Gray's recent survey of grown unschoolers, and the majority of them were business owners, right? And I've heard that elsewhere too, that unschooling is, you know, unschoolers are far more likely to go into business for themselves than they are to go work for somebody else.
Right.
Also, they're far more likely to go into more creative and artistic fields, or engineering type fields than they are, you know, otherwise.
Sure.
You know, so that's kind of interesting too. But anyway, yeah. That's just another criticism that is, I think, completely demolished by actual real world experience of unschoolers. So anyway.
Yeah, and this also indicates that every child absolutely needs to thrive in a university or college setting when they may have enough life experience and entrepreneurial drive and skills to be able to start a business and skip the 4 to 7 to 9 years of college needed for the kind of training to eventually get a paycheck at age 27, you know?
Yeah.
So, all right. Yeah, it's, I don't know. I'm just getting mad. I want to get through these. So, that there is a possibility that the child might grow up to be a spoiled brat. That's what I glanced at that, and that's what made me pissed off, and that's why I couldn't think. Grow up to be a spoiled brat, considering he or she was basically allowed to do whatever he or she wished for all formative years. Huh?
Yeah, and this is something that I wrote recently in my Two Cents series, on the idea of spoiled and when kids are spoiled. Now, what does spoiled mean? Spoiled means to strip away, to plunder, to pillage. Okay, so I think that when kids are not given free play, right, when they're not allowed to do whatever they want, you know, with the caveats we mentioned before of not unintentionally hurting themselves or harming other people or destroying the property of others, then what's taken away from them, what's stripped from them, what's plundered and pillaged is I think their empathy for others, right? And I think their intrinsic motivation, right? Because they're, you know, carrot and stick, they're forced to do things they don't really care about. Their natural curiosity is stripped from them. Right, because now whenever they want to be curious about something, you know, there's no time for that. They've got to do this other thing, and so I think the real way to spoil kids, you know, to strip and pillage and plunder away from them is through control, and it's through schooling, and it's through not being peaceful, right, and it's through authoritarian and violent measures and that kind of stuff.
Hmm.
You know what I mean? So that word, I mean, just going back, that word, grow up to be a spoiled brat, I think that's totally inaccurate.
Yeah.
When it comes to, you know, that what that actually means.
And I don't, now, oh, sorry. I was just no, going to say, I do you want to go ahead? Let's see.
No,
we're dancing
ahead,
right now. Okay. I was considering he or she was basically allowed to do whatever he or she wished for all formative years. See, I don't think it's doing things that makes a kid a spoiled brat. I think it's getting. Does that kind of make sense? Like, yeah. If you're not making emotional connection with your kids through time and you're using things to satisfy their needs for connection, that I think is what makes a spoiled brat. So sure, an unschooled kid could become a spoiled brat. I don't doubt that. If their parents don't give them connection and love and give them things instead of that love and connection. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but then I don't think they're really unschooling. I think unschooling implies the parents being partners with their kids, which I think implies the you know, what you just said, the empathy and the negotiation and the respect, mutual respect, mutual trust.
Unschooling, I'd say, is easier for the kids and a little more emotionally engaging for the parents.
Right. Okay. So when we're talking about being a spoiled brat colloquially, which is how this is written, what is it that creates that? I mean, those, and you know, and I've met kids that way, and they certainly seem to have a chip on their shoulder, which is usually indicative of resentment towards something. What is it they resent? And when it comes to spoiled brats, there's that entitlement mentality. And so the entitlement mentality is always being given whatever they want. And I think the resentment comes from being treated disrespectfully and unempathetically by their parents.
Right. Yeah. And I think of that as kind of the permissive side of the parenting style rather than the authoritarian. That's kid win, child lose. Or kid win, parent lose.
Yeah.
Rather than
yeah.
the authoritarian, which is parent win, kid lose.
Definitely.
So, yeah, I don't see. I've never met any unschooling kids that are spoiled brats.
I've
met some that are full of energy and a little inconvenient. That's it.
Well, okay, and.
But I've met so many other kids that way.
Well,
too.
Going back to the dichotomy between permissive and authoritarian. What I've seen is that kids have been given a lot, like materially, whatever they've wanted, but they've otherwise been treated, you know, the parents have been authoritarian.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like they don't know how to ask for what they really want, which is, I want a hug. I want to talk. I want to connect. I want to feel loved. So they go to the thing that feels the closest, which is, I don't know, maybe holiday gift giving, where that's a time when there seems to be more approval, more acceptance, abundance, love, connection. So they associate things with the feelings of love rather than just them, their parents being there for them and them connecting with them. Does that kind of make sense? I said them a lot.
Well, yeah, it does. And so they haven't learned empathy because they haven't been treated that way. And so they're less likely to, you know, that's where the brat side comes in when it comes to treating other people. You know, so they're entitled and then they're, you know, they're entitled and they're more likely to act like jerks about it.
Yeah,
and because they don't consider how that affects other people, because they lack the empathy which is created through the connection and the attachment from very early childhood forward.
Yeah, and it also seems to emerge from parents who have no idea what to do when the kid has strong emotions, which may stem from their own childhoods in which they were not allowed to properly express their emotions, thus developing emotional intelligence in order to be able to handle and empathize with the emotional outbursts of a developing child.
Yeah, definitely. And so I think what happens is the child has a spat and the parent responds with a spat. Okay. And that's where a lot of the resentment comes from, I think. You know, and so it's just ugliness all around. And so they just don't quite learn the right behavior for controlling or, you know, dealing with those kind of strong emotions, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Anyway. All right. So there's the last one. I love this one. That unschooling fosters social awkwardness, alienation from peers, friends, and classmates, and a lack of respect for authority. Now, I personally don't value social awkwardness, alienation from peers, friends, and classmates, but I do value lack of respect for authority. So that's a feature.
Yes.
because I think authority does not, by virtue of authority, deserve respect. I think respect should be earned on an individual basis. And I don't think anybody just, you know, respect cannot be demanded.
Yeah. Arbitrary authority.
Right.
Whereas, you know, the old line that I trust the authority of a heart surgeon to do his job.
Well, right.
And I'm not going to do that myself, but that's earned through study and knowledge and wisdom, not granted by a higher authority than that authority.
Well, right. And so if an I think that's okay. So lack of respect for arbitrary authority, I think, is a feature. But if we turn that around and say, respect for natural authority, I think an unschooler is more likely to have that, because, they're going to come across all sorts of personalities when they're exploring their interests, right? And because they're studying directly from them, that I think is what's going to develop that respect for that natural authority. I mean, I'm just considering myself. Obviously, as an adult, I've studied economics, philosophy, ethics. To me, that's me pursuing my interests in those realms, and I've studied, from different people, and I've learned respect for what it is they have to say, right? That natural authority that they have because they're trained and accomplished in their particular field. If that makes sense. And so if you take that more on a younger person's level, I think it's more likely for the unschooler to develop respect for the natural authority, less so for arbitrary authority, but more so for natural authority. So I think that's a good thing. And then where it says foster social awkwardness, alienation from peers, friends, and classmates, I think there's some validity to that. Especially when, okay, so just take the, are you still there?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, I just want to make sure I didn't lose you again.
Nope.
Take the phrase social awkwardness. I mean, well, it depends on what we're talking about, what society we're talking about. Now, if we're talking about a society of dumbed down worker bees, and then somebody who is full of life and full of creativity and full of curiosity and full of passion comes into that society, yeah, they're going to be considered pretty awkward. Now, is that going to generate costs for that person who expects to live in that particular society or to get along? Yeah, I think it might make it harder. But to me, it's not worth getting rid of all of what I consider to be wonderful features, curiosity and motivation and passion and optimism that are typical of unschoolers, in order to help them make things easier and less costly in a world or in a society of worker bees. Does that make sense?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's what kind of social system are they awkward in? A system where joy is shamed and spontaneous play and silliness and, just the kind of joy that life can be when you're not forced to do things all the time and you get to choose what to do. That a free person, I would seem pretty, I'd be pretty awkward if I went to China, like right, trying right. to learn and fit into that. But homeschooled and unschooled kids I've met, they're not socially awkward when it comes to talking to parents. Have you ever met a kid who can only talk to people his age? He or she has no skills talking to anybody older or younger than them.
Yeah.
They only know how to talk to people their age.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To me, that's awkward. To me,
that is very awkward.
Yeah. Based on my desired society and what I would like to see society become, that is very awkward. That's social awkwardness. And yeah, that's created through the regimentation and the segregation that schools provide. I like where it says alienation from peers, friends, and classmates. Well, they don't have classmates, so that doesn't make sense. Now, alienation from peers and friends, well, not if their peers and friends are also unschoolers or homeschoolers or, other people that they built friendships with.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's based on common interest rather than those accidents of geography. Man, I really want to emphasize my distaste for this justification for public schools. The idea that your peer group, it's important to have people your age. Sure, but it's also important to have people every other age and not to automatically view younger people as less than you and older people as better than you. That's what the whole system sets you up for. And it's this, like, I have value because I was born in 1984, whereas you were born in 1985. So suddenly you're deriving pride from things that don't really matter. Mm-hmm. Do you get what I'm saying? Like, I'm proud. You start with the arbitrary pride of your age, and then you get the arbitrary pride of your school, which leads to the arbitrary pride of patriotism because of the Pledge of Allegiance that has to be said every morning. And then that, and then you retreat from that and go to the arbitrary pride in your sports team, which represents your accident of geography. And that carries on to nationalism. And it's just, I want my kids to derive their pride and sense of self-worth from their attributes and not the attributes of the group to which they belong.
Their attributes and their accomplishments.
Exactly.
Rather than, I mean, I remember being in school and we're learning as Americans, and I'm sure every country, of course, is this way. We're learning about triumph after triumph of the American military, right? I mean, you learn about Revolutionary War. Yeah, we kicked their asses. We learn about the Civil War from the North's perspective. Again, so you feel that, yeah, we kicked their asses. And then World War I, yeah, we kicked their asses. World War II, yeah, we kicked their asses. Korean War, yeah, we kicked our asses. And then Vietnam, it's like, yeah, we just won't talk about this. Yeah. Iraq, we just won't talk about this. I just remember it kind of falling off at that point. I'm going, you know, I felt all that pride to be an American, that we're number one, that we kick ass, you know, we win every war we fight. Those aren't my accomplishments.
Yeah, you know, nothing.
and not only are they not my accomplishments, but today I question whether or not those are accomplishments to be proud of at all,
right?
You know, whether they're even yours.
Yeah, so, kicking anyway. Ass. Yeah, and so you get this education that says kicking ass is awesome, and then when a kid kicks your ass, everybody's like, oh, how could he? Well, you just modeled that the thing I owe my allegiance to and pledge allegiance to all the time got to where it's at as the best by kicking everybody's ass.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we could go on for hours just fetching about school. I would like to find a list of more valid criticisms for another episode to actually address concerns that are sincere. Like, I think within this list, there are some that are important because I have met the coolest people that have been homeschooled and unschooled, but I have met people I found socially awkward. But they were coming from more like fundamentalist religious homes rather than, you know, free thinking parents. And they were afraid of the outside world. I don't think the way we're approaching unschooling is there to make people afraid of the outside world. I'm teaching my kids that this is the most exciting time to be alive in the history of humanity. Are you kidding me? The amount of knowledge that's accessible at the click of a button by a six-year-old, it's a miracle to be alive right now. Why would I want to put them in a concrete room where they have to sit in rows and learn all the same crap that I learned? There's so much more to learn, and I'd rather take the 13,000 hours that he would have spent doing what an authority told him to do and asking permission to go to the bathroom. I'd rather he take that time practicing being a self-starter, saying yes when he wants to say yes, no when he wants to say no. All of the things that you know, Nathaniel Brandon talks about in the Six Pillars of Self-Esteem, that kind of stuff. I could talk about this for hours, but do you have anything you want to say in closing?
Well, no, I just wanted to add, I mentioned earlier the survey of grown unschoolers that Peter Gray conducted, he and another lady, and of everybody that responded, two people gave, there was a question about the overall experience of unschooling and whether or not they would, you know, do it for their children or, you know, overall what their experience was. And two people rated that negatively. And so he dived into them. And the reason that they did was because their parents were of the sort that the reason they were unschooling was because they were paranoid, they didn't trust anybody, or they, you know, they were religious fundamentalists, and you know, they intentionally kept prevented their kids from exploring the world and meeting other people and that kind of stuff, which is a central component, a central part of unschooling. And so, you know, obviously you got to question if you can even call it unschooling. They were allowed to kind of pursue what they wanted to, and they were kept out of school pretty much by force. And so it wasn't really homeschooling, it wasn't public schooling, and it wasn't quite unschooling either. It was kind of something else, something in between, I guess you could say. And so that was interesting. But everybody else who were full-fledged unschoolers had an absolutely positive experience, and either said that they didn't know, it would kind of be between them and their spouse, or that they would absolutely try to do it with their kids. And so,
see, that's awesome to hear.
Yeah, it is. It's great. So I'm going to link to that, and I'll link to the survey he did of unschooling families. And so that's more from the parenting, the parents' perspective. I'll link to his book, and then I guess maybe one or two really good unschooling resource sites, I guess. Awesome. So we'll have this was kind of a conversation on the criticism of unschooling. We'll definitely have more discussions on unschooling proper as we get to that section in my book, which is probably some time away. I'm sure we'll find other stuff to talk about as it concerns unschoolings before then. But anyway, so
awesome.
But yeah, I'll put the links in there just so people can kind of, you know, get an idea of what we're talking about when we say unschooling. So
yeah, that was our little criticism of the criticisms of unschooling. I think they could do a better job. You hear that, Rational Wiki? Come on, get some better criticisms and be honest.
Well,
if it's the propaedeutic function, hey, you are going against the Illuminati's instructions to make sure that the tall poppies are cut down so that the short poppies don't feel so bad. And rewarding the smartest among us so that they think that their self-worth has to be wrapped up in maintaining the system that told them they were awesome. That seems to be what the whole tracking and AP classes and stuff like that is about, is taking the minds that could potentially be a threat to the system and giving them so many goodies and rewards and praises and places of position and feelings of significance that they have no interest in stopping the system from continuing, because that's the system that told them they were great the entire time. So yeah. Actually, I went from Illuminati into what I actually think. So anyway, sweet. That was fun.
That was fun. Okay. All right. All right. Thanks for listening. If you donate to us, Phil will make you a song. 1 second for every dollar. Go to everythingvoluntary.com. Links on the right for that. Subscribe to us. If you like any of the episodes, share them on your social media just so we can generate interest. Yeah, that's it. All right. Email us, everythingvoluntary@gmail.com. Any comments or questions, we'd love to hear from you. That's it. I'm Skyler.
And I'm Phil.
Thanks for listening.
Have a good night.